What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. Burge, Manish are going to be back at it again with you. As always, please follow us on X, TikTok, Instagram. Subscribe to us on YouTube at Tackles Pod. Leave us a five-star review. Like, subscribe, download. Goes a long way to continuing to help us build this amazing platform that we've done over the last couple of years now. I love it. So please, if you'd love it too, give us a follow. Manish, it's June 1st. What a day. What a day. Probably the most exciting day of the offseason, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it is. It's actually pretty funny, right? Everyone gets ramped up for the free agency period that lasts like 2 or 3 days, and then the draft, and rarely is June 1st the date that kind of grabs all the headlines. But two blockbuster trades today. One, we knew what was coming, so we knew we were going to have this episode inevitably, but there was a surprising blockbuster trade that kind of trumped the A.J. Brown New England Patriots news.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this player on last week's podcast. Didn't go where your bias was hoping he was going to go, but Myles Garrett is leaving Cleveland finally. For me, I'm happy for him to get out of that, for lack of a better word, hellhole. He's wasted his years there. You know, it's great to see him go to a contender. The Los Angeles Rams make another splash. They trade for Garrett. They give up a pretty darn good defensive end, Jared Verse, a 2027 first round pick. And what was the other
2028 second round pick and a 2029 third round
pick. It's just like unbelievable. And I sent this to you when this trade went through. The Rams, they just continue to have this F them picks mentality. They don't care about the picks. They are using those picks to go out and support their cast. It's already gotten them one Super Bowl. And you know, after this trade, it's not going to surprise anyone if they get a second. I read something on Twitter today, right before, you know, right after this news broke, that they've made one first round pick in the last like 8 or 9 years. And that pick was Jared Verse, which is ironic because he was just sent out of town to Cleveland in this trade. Yeah, the Rams instantly, you know, if they weren't your Super Bowl favorite before this trade, where a lot of people already are pegging them to make the Super Bowl, they definitely have to be the clear cut top favorite to win the Super Bowl in 2026.
I think on paper, of course, it makes a lot of sense. And I think their Super Bowl odds jumped from a plus 800 to plus 650, somewhere in that neighborhood. And of course, look, Myles Garrett is 30 years old. He's going to be 31, I believe, late during the 2026 season. So he obviously makes them better. Initially, when the news broke that the Rams were going to get Garrett, I thought, wow, this is incredible. A, I don't really understand how they're doing it, because they've sacrificed so much premium draft capital over the past decade, yet have maintained a really high level of play. And then I was a little bit conflicted when the details of the trade emerged. Jared Verse, to me, is an ascending superstar player. Two seasons in the league, made Pro Bowls in both seasons. He was the defensive rookie of the year, 7.5 sacks last year. I believe he has 40-some-odd quarterback hits in 32 games. So he creates consistent pressure on the quarterback. He's only going to get better. Really, honestly, I feel bad for the guy. It's a terrible day for him to go from the Los Angeles Rams, who are a premium Super Bowl contender, to one of the worst teams in the NFL overnight. It's got to be very irritating for him. The question in my mind is, for as good as Myles Garrett is, two-time defensive player of the year, five-time first-team All-Pro, showing no signs, honestly, of slowing down, but he is 30 years old. He'll turn 31 at some point this season. The question becomes, is the difference between Myles Garrett and a 25-year-old Jared Verse a future first, second, and third round pick? Because essentially, that is what the Rams gave up. That difference between the two players, it's not as if we're talking about a middling young player. This is an emerging superstar young player, 5-6 years younger than Myles Garrett. Now, is he Garrett? Of course he's not. But can he make a real difference along the defensive line? Of course he can. He has shown that. So that's a heavy price to pay. And I love Myles Garrett. You can make a viable case that Myles Garrett is the best player in the NFL, certainly the best defensive player in the NFL. But he is 30 years old, about to turn 31. You do have a fairly hefty contract that you have to deal with. He just signed, I believe, a four-year, $160 million extension with the Browns. So these are all factors that I think should be explored. If you weren't going to have Verse in the deal, that's a different question. Now, the reports are that the Browns said it's a non-starter if Verse is not in the deal. The initial discussions did not include Jared Verse, and you understand why the Rams didn't want to give him up. But at the end of the day, they felt that getting Garrett was just too enticing. I'm not sure I agree with that. I love Myles Garrett, but I also love a much younger Jared Verse, and I love three premium round picks that the Browns are not going to have, that now going to have. Garrett, for as good as he is, he's not going to, all likelihood, be a dominant player when the Browns are ready to compete. So I love what Andrew Berry did. I really do. You know, they got a great asset there, and they parlayed that into a first, second, and third round pick, offloaded the salary as well. So I don't think it's a slam dunk win for the Rams. In the short term, all in, while Matthew Stafford's still playing at a high level, completely understand that. But there is a price to be paid. And when we look back in a few years, if the Rams don't ultimately hoist a Lombardi trophy with Myles Garrett, I think the Browns might be the team that's going to get the last laugh on this.
I think you're absolutely right when you put it that way. When we talked about this last week, we were basically saying Garrett's not going to help Cleveland. The way Garrett helps Cleveland is bringing in premium assets, and that's what this trade did for them. They get the first round pick in the 2027 draft, where, you know, all reports at this point are saying that is an extremely deep draft. It has a potential to be a win-win trade, right? You know, if the Rams end up hoisting the trophy, you know, they're really trying to maximize this window that they have right now. Matthew Stafford's not getting any younger. You know, they have Davante Adams not getting any younger. They're really trying to maximize what they have now. And I love that aggressiveness, you know, being up here in New England and watching the Patriots not do this when Tom Brady was here and they had all those runs. Maybe they even come away with more Super Bowl titles if they were as aggressive as they were, because we know the Patriots and their first round draft picks notoriously busted out, right? They drafted a bunch of guys like N'Keal Harry and Cole Strange, and it never worked out for the Patriots. Had they been more aggressive in acquiring this type of talent, who knows what that would have done. So I really like what Les Snead and Sean McVay are doing in Los Angeles right now to really try to maximize that window. On the flip side, the Browns, they're not going anywhere next year. They're getting the pieces to put in place in the years to come for first-year head coach Todd Monken. I really like this move for them as well. I still think, as of today, June 1st, it's a win for the Rams. It's hard for me to say that because of the caliber of a player that Myles Garrett has shown he is, just even as recently as last season. So for me, it's the Rams. But in 2-3 years, if we revisit this trade, probably going to look different.
It's fascinating to me. You mentioned Les Snead and Sean McVay. Kevin Demoff, their president, is also part of the thought process and the deliberation when making deals like this. They've really taken an unorthodox approach. You touched on the fact about their mantra, F them picks. 2017 to 2023, that was that 7-year period where they did not have a first-round pick, which is amazing given that they've been competitive and won a Super Bowl during that run. It's highly unusual. You know, teams guard first-round picks like gold. They don't want to part with them. And the Rams have been unafraid and been aggressive to the point of almost recklessness, but it hasn't manifested itself in that way. They haven't really ever bottomed out. So that's a credit to Demoff, Snead, McVay, the whole brain trust there. I just think, ultimately, you're not going to push your chips into the table all the time and come up on top. And clearly, this is a move for 2026 and 2027. likely not beyond that, because I don't know if Myles Garrett's going to be a dominant force at the age of 32, 33 years old. I would tend to think that he would not be. Probably still a productive player, but you never know when players get to the wrong side of 30. They do fall off the cliff faster than most people think, but they believe that this window is now for Matthew Stafford, which frankly makes the Ty Simpson pick in the top 15 of the draft this year that much more confounding in my estimation. I know they're trying to plan for the future, but you know, given what they just did acquiring Myles Garrett, why couldn't they have just gotten a player that would have helped him in the draft in 2026? I sound like a broken record. It still kind of confuses me, and I don't think that's going to pan out for them. But I would not have had the Rams on the bingo card when talking about which teams would have made a play for Myles Garrett. And at the top, you touched on me discussing Howie Roseman potentially making a stealth move to try to get Myles Garrett. Reportedly, the Eagles actually were involved in discussions. I don't know how serious it got, how close the Eagles got, but they were one of the teams that actually did talk to the Rams about getting Myles Garrett. So I think the thought process was correct for Howie Roseman. But the idea of giving up a first, second, and third over the next 3 years was obviously too pricey when you also factor in Garrett's age and his hefty contract. So it's a bold move by the Rams. I thought they were the Super Bowl favorite in my mind, regardless of what Vegas said, even before this trade, because, again, in my mind, Jared Verse is a superstar, all-pro in waiting. And this isn't some, okay player or some very good player. This is a guy with real star potential, and that must have hurt the Rams' brain trust, you know, on some level to part with him, because they understand there's a 5-6 year head start that Garrett has, and a 5-6 year window there where Verse could turn into a perennial first team all pro player, which I frankly think he will be if he can stay healthy. Who knows how things kind of unfold in Cleveland because of the circumstance. But from a talent perspective, he's a stud. And giving up a 25-year-old stud pass rusher with a first, second, and third is just – it's such a big price to pay. And, again, I'm a Myles Garrett fan. Who isn't? But, they clearly believe that 2026 can be their year, and Myles Garrett can put them over the top. Frankly, I think they could have gotten to the top without him.
I just pulled up the tweet. All right. So since 2015, the 2015 first round pick for the Rams was Todd Gurley. 2016 was Jared Goff. The next 7 or 8 years traded. 2024 Verse, then Ty Simpson. Everything else has been traded. So Ty Simpson is the only first round pick in the last decade that is still around on the Rams. It's just, it's mind blowing. And, you know, I mentioned F them picks. This is what this is. And it's mind-boggling because I don't think any other team in the NFL has ever gone about it in this way. This is like kind of a new thing.
And yeah, I think it's an outlier. It's worked. I mean, I think it's an outlier. I don't think this is some kind of blueprint that other teams are going to follow.
Right.
It's easy to try this, but then you would probably bottom out for half a decade or so, and the Rams just haven't done that. And that, to me, is the most impressive part. It's one thing to be ultra aggressive, but then to actually maintain a fairly high level of success while doing that is an outlier to me. It's fascinating. Maybe somebody can do a deep dive on this 10, 15 years from now. I don't think that'll be replicated. I don't think teams are going to suddenly look at the Rams and say, well, this is how you win. Because again, everyone is so afraid of parting with these first round picks, and rightfully so, frankly, because you get premium young talent at a very relatively cheap cost. So that's the way to build. What the Rams have done is not your typical way to build. And that's why, you know, I give Kevin Demoff and Les Snead and Sean McVay credit for, bucking the trend and still being one of the most dangerous teams in the league.
Bottom out is going to happen at some point. And we'll be interested to see when it does. Let's move on to the other deal of the day. This one hits home for both Manish and I. Some spirited talk in the group chat in the text chain after this one broke today. But AJ Brown is officially a member of the New England Patriots. We can put the speculation and the discussion to bed on what the compensation was going to look like or whatever. We know what it is, and it's been decided. AJ Brown goes to New England in exchange for a 2028 first round pick and a 2027 fifth-round pick. It will be the better of the two fifth-round picks that the Patriots currently have. Manish, I'll give you the floor first.
I think I've made it abundantly clear that I love A.J. Brown as a player. He's my favorite Philadelphia Eagle, or he was, I should say, my favorite Philadelphia Eagle. That being said, you read the tea leaves. You knew that he was going to be moved. He did not want to play with Jalen Hurts any longer. It would have been an untenable situation. So Howie Roseman scoured the league. And obviously, in my mind, the Patriots were the only team that was willing to give up a first-round pick, not in 2027, but in 2028. I can't imagine another team even offered a 2028 first-round pick. The bottom line is that the Eagles general manager took the best offer that he could, and that included a first-round pick. I'm not going to tell you that I am happy as an Eagles fan that A.J. Brown is no longer on the team. However, the fact that they do get a 2028 first-round pick, to me, is massive for a player who will turn 29 later this month, who has had a history of knee issues, and I hope that he remains healthy. He wasn't healthy last year. He had soft tissue issues early in the season, and he wasn't healthy for the full season prior to that. And if I'm being completely honest, for as big as a fan of A.J. Brown as I am, he is a depreciating asset. He peaked as a 25 and 26-year-old player for the Philadelphia Eagles when he had two 1,400-yard seasons, dynamic player those years. The last 2 years have been good, not great. Now, the question that we can have, which I'm sure we are, is how much of that is a function of A.J. Brown declining and how much of it is a function of the quarterback, in this particular case, Jalen Hurts, not being good enough? I guess we'll find that out because I'm a big believer in Drake May. So we'll see if a 29 and 30-year-old A.J. Brown still can deliver, because I think this really is like a two-year window. I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good player when he's 31 or 32. I'm saying that he's not going to be or not really have a chance to be a top-flight type of player at that age. He's really kind of coming up at the end of that level of play. I mean, honestly, I don't think A.J. Brown's ever going to play in a Super Bowl again. He went to two Super Bowls in his four seasons with the Eagles. He won a Lombardi trophy. I think his best years are behind him. That's not to say that he can't be a good player, but I'll leave you with this off the top here, Burge. Much like how I said is the difference between Jared Verse and Myles Garrett, three premium round picks, I will ask you, is the difference between a 29-year-old A.J. Brown and a 33-year-old Stephon Diggs a first-round pick? Because let's be honest, Stephon Diggs has been cleared of any wrongdoing off the field. Every indication last year was that he was a great teammate, got along with Drake May, so there was no malcontent element to Steph Diggs. They could have easily brought him back and kept their future first-round pick. So when you look at how both guys played last year, it was very comparable. Virtually the same amount of catches and yards. I believe AJ had, seven touchdowns. Maybe Steph had four touchdowns, something like that. But the numbers were very comparable. There is a four-year gap, but these guys are older players. So would you rather have had Diggs and kept the first-round pick, or would you rather have a 29-year-old player who does have knee issues? And again, I'm not hoping that those things resurface or get worse, but that is reality. Is the difference in production between Brown and Diggs a first-round pick? I say no.
It's a tough question. I mean, I think it was clear that the Patriots were moving on from Stephon Diggs one way or another. And much like with the Rams, when I talk about Myles Garrett, I love the aggressiveness. It shows me that this team is buying into what they have. They are doing what they can to maximize the window while Drake May is on his rookie contract. Drake May is entering year three. So you have realistically this year and next year before the fifth year option hits on Drake May. And I would pay the 2028 first round pick. We and I have gone back and forth about what we determined was good value for A.J. Brown, what we expected to happen and what we were willing to pay. I was completely unwilling to move the 2027 first round pick for A.J. Brown, specifically because of the depth of the 2027 draft. Now, I've seen some things. I haven't looked at the trade value evaluator on this stuff, but first round pick in 2028, equivalent to a 2027 second, give or take a little bit. Now, if the offer was a 2027 second for AJ Brown, I make that trade. I think you would too. I think you would make that trade too if you were in the Patriots' shoes. But look, they're trying to maximize Drake May's window of being on his rookie contract. They give him a weapon who's going to be here for the foreseeable future. There's a commitment there. So perhaps some consistency, which Drake May has not had really at all for the first couple of years out of his career. I mean, he went through a whole new head coach in year two, new offensive system in year two. He's going to see a new receiver in year three, basically a new receiver room if you count Romeo Doubs. And there's a commitment there for that unit to be in place for the next couple of years. Obviously, you bring up the knee issues that were ongoing with A.J. Brown. My understanding is this trade is still pending a physical. So if something comes up in his physical,
then, haven't we heard could that you imagine, before? We heard could that you
imagine,
right?
Could you imagine if that comes up? That's the way for the Patriots to save face if they really didn't want to make this trade after everything that went off this offseason. They're going to throw the physical in. No, but if they find something there that is concerning with AJ Brown, and then that's a whole other podcast that we end up having with if that decides to happen. But at the end of the day, I am very, very happy that AJ Brown is here in New England, finally official, so we could stop speculating about it and that they could start getting to work going into 2026. You and I very much differ on the outlook of the future of the New England Patriots, even this trade notwithstanding. So I think this only does more to solidify my feelings on the 2026 Patriots, record outlook, however you want, whatever you want to call it. It further solidifies my confidence in what they're going to do in 2026. So I'm very happy.
Well, let me ask you something. I do want to delve into our perception of the team of the Patriots, because that essentially kind of drives how you think this deal works in terms of who won, who lost. But before I do that, you'd mentioned that it became apparent that the Patriots were not going to bring back Steph Diggs. I haven't heard any reason why they did not want to bring back Steph Diggs after the legal stuff was cleared. I understand with all that stuff hanging over his head why they wouldn't want him back, but he has been exonerated of all that he was accused of, I believe. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So that being the case, given the fact that every indication was that he had a good rapport with May, with Josh McDaniels, Mike Vrabel, he wasn't a problem, and he had a productive season last year. So why was it inevitable that he was not going to be back? That I have not gotten a clear answer to.
I mean, I just, you look at the moves that they've made. They bring in Romeo Doubs. They pay him a good chunk of money. And from the start of the offseason, we were talking about A.J. Brown in New England. So you got those two guys there. You still have Mac Hollins under contract. You still have DeMario Douglas there. You still have whatever the heck is going on with Kayshon Booty. So now you're talking about a crowded room. Look, if you're going to sit here and tell me that the Patriots go out and trade for A.J. Brown and now they're going to go back and sign Stephon Diggs to add to this room, I think everybody in New England would be ecstatic at that. But the fact that they made the move with Romeo Doubs, they made the move with A.J. Brown, which, again, has been speculated since February, that's kind of where I'm driving that. I haven't had any confirmation of the fact that the Patriots are moving on, but you just look at what they've done. It was clear that, Stephon Diggs was not going to be their number one receiver next season.
Right. So let me ask you this. Before the trade became official, obviously everyone knew that AJ was coming, or at least
back in February.
Yeah. Basically at the Super Bowl, you mentioned Romeo Doubs. Look, I understand any team that signs a new free agent, they always want to elevate how good that player actually is. I mean, what is Romeo Doubs? Romeo Doubs to me is just a guy. That's a jag, right? That's a term that's used around the NFL. He's coming off a career high It wasn't a career high. His career high is 59 receptions. He's coming off a career high 724 yards. So what are we actually talking about here? What kind of player is Romeo Doubs? Romeo Doubs is on every single team in the NFL. Every team has a Romeo Doubs. I don't really understand how Romeo Doubs would impact Stephon Diggs. You mentioned Matt Collins, Kayshon Booty. You're a lifelong Patriot fan. Who was the best Patriots receiver last year?
I know it was Stephon Diggs.
Okay, so
I'm not.
I know you don't have the answer. I don't have the answer, and that's what's confounding to me. It was almost a fait accompli that they weren't going to bring Diggs back when every indication was that he got along great with the young franchise quarterback, and he was the young franchise quarterback's best receiver last year.
I think it's clear when they signed Romeo Doubs that they were looking to get a little bit younger at the position, right? You bring him in, he's only 25, going to be 26, or he's 26 now.
Can't Doubs be the number three receiver on this team?
I'm not disputing that. I just said, if you were going to tell me right now that you're going to bring in Stephon Diggs back to New England, I think everybody in this region up here would be thrilled to have him, AJ Brown, and Romeo Doubs out there on the field at the same time. I don't think anybody would be upset at that fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring back Diggs for a year, you keep your first-round pick, you see how the 2026 season unfolds. That brings me to what I had said a moment ago about how you perceive the Patriots really kind of shapes your opinion on this trade. And I know that Patriot fans have this feeling that everybody hates them. Well, I'll tell you who does not hate the New England Patriots. I'll tell you who does not love the New England Patriots. A completely unbiased third party are Las Vegas odds makers. And the Las Vegas odds makers gave the New England Patriots an over-under win total of 9.5 after they won the AFC and went to the Super Bowl. So that isn't a collective that is hating on the Patriots. That's a collective that's looking at this objectively and saying, this team last year made a magical, fluky run, and we're going to put him at 9.5. In fact, there's a team in their own division who has better Super Bowl odds and a higher over-under win total in the Buffalo Bills. So this is not as if there's some kind of axe to grind against the New England Patriots. I think if you look at this objectively, this is a team that got virtually every break in 2025. And the reality is that objective people, and I'm not talking about me, although I think I'm objective, but I'm talking about Las Vegas. 9.5 wins after a Super Bowl run is unheard of. I frankly cannot remember such a low win total for a team that won the conference the year before. That tells you, in my estimation, that there aren't very many believers in the New England Patriots outside of New England Patriot fans. And given that as the context for what I'm about to say, I think the 2027 draft pick would have been much better for reasons that you outlined earlier. It's a deep draft. We don't really know about the 2028 draft. I don't know anyone who can even like explain, you know, who the better players would be in the 2028 draft, and it's so far off. I look at it this way from a Philadelphia Eagles perspective. Would you have wanted the 2027 first-round pick? Yes, because frankly, I don't think that it's going to be anywhere close to the 31st pick or whatever the Patriots had this past draft. It's going to be much closer to 20, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then I would also contend that the AFC East in 2027 will be much more difficult than the AFC East in 2026, because I think two of the four worst teams in the NFL entering this season reside in the AFC East, and that's the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins. And I think that'll be reflected in the draft order for 2027. If you conservatively say that both the Jets and the Dolphins will be better in 2027 than they are going to be in 2026, because you would assume both teams would have premium draft capital, probably draft a quarterback, and probably be better than they will be this season. I don't think I'm saying anything out of turn here. I think that's probably consensus. If you go and operate under that reality, then the Patriots are going to have a more difficult road in their own division in 2028. So that's why that 2028 draft pick, while not the most desirable draft pick for the Eagles, that would have been the year before, 2027. But I believe that 2028 draft pick is going to yield a top 15 pick, top 12 to 15 pick, to be perfectly honest with you. And if that is the case, you're talking about a two-year shelf life of a 29 and 30-year-old A.J. Brown versus a top 15 rookie pick in 2028 that you're going to pay peanuts to. And if you draft right, and it's a big if you draft right, that guy could be a part of your team for a very long time. Now, I say all of this, but what I truly believe that Howie Roseman is going to do with that 2028 New England pick is package it before next year's draft and move up and draft his own franchise quarterback, because I don't believe that Jalen Hurts is going to be good enough this year to warrant a contract extension. I think they will move on from Jalen Hurts, use the draft capital they get in a Jalen Hurts trade, combine that with the 2028 first-round pick that they get from the New England Patriots, and then move up into a reportedly deep quarterback class in 2027 and draft their quarterback. You know, it sounds like a lot of moving pieces, but you don't really have to look that deep into Howie Roseman's history to know that he did something very similar by trading up twice to move up to number two to take Carson Wentz. So if there's anybody in this league at GM who can do something that creative, it's Howie Roseman. He just gets another asset with the Patriots' 2028 first round.
Man, you're a pretty big believer in what the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins are doing. If you're saying that the Patriots' schedule is going to be harder because their division is going to be harder, you're putting a lot of faith in that.
Well, I'm putting a lot of faith in that the Jets and the Dolphins will be better in 2027 than they are in 2026, because in 2026 they're a complete train wreck, right?
So you go from three wins to five wins, like.
No, well, I think it's a little presumptuous to assume that the Patriots are just going to roll over and go 8-0 against the Jets and the Dolphins over the next two seasons. I think that for as much as the Jets have been a laughingstock and the Dolphins really look awful on paper this year, they are going to restock and get better. So maybe it goes from 3-6, 3-7. I don't really know. I don't even know who the Jets head coach is going to be in 2027. So there's a lot of variables there. But again, for as critical as I've been of the New York Jets, at least I will concede, given the fact that they have three first-round picks next year, one of them will likely be a quarterback, you would assume that in 2027 they will put out a better product than they will in 2026.
Right. But I mean, you know, you put the better product out. Again, you go from three wins to five or six wins.
But are they going from three wins to five or six wins?
I'm just saying. But that
didn't
would,
the
would,
Patriots go from four wins to going to the Super Bowl?
Yes, but the Patriots aren't the Jets. The Jets have been this way for 25 years or for 15, 20 years.
They have three first-round picks in
You still got a hit on them.
That's true, and honestly, we don't really know if Darren Mooji can do that. I mean, people have given him good reviews in his past draft, but you don't really know until the guys actually play.
Right.
But you have three first-round picks, and let's be honest, one of those first-round picks is the Indianapolis Colts first-round pick. And if there's ever a team that is bound to make a big drop-off in win total from last year to this year, I think the Indianapolis Colts are in that group.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm just saying it's putting a lot of stock into a franchise that has been a laughing stock for a very long time.
Look, I agree. You don't have to tell me about the Jet history. I know the Jets history inside and out. I also know that it's unprecedented to have three first round picks, potentially two in the top 10 and then three in the top 20. That is unbelievable. And if ever there was a moment in time where a moribund franchise could turn things around quickly, it's now. Just being honest.
I don't share any level of optimism.
Well, I mean,
that
you're
they're
a Patriot
able to
homer. I get it.
Even if I wasn't, I've seen the Jets for so long, and outside of what, 3 years, three, 4 years with Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez, they've been irrelevant. So like,
well, that's not true. In 2015, Todd Bowles' first year, they did win 10 games and missed the playoffs, winning 10 games in a 16-game season.
Okay, fair enough. But like, I can't think of a time outside of that period of time with Mark Sanchez and Rex Ryan where like I actually felt like the Jets might be back. It's just,
yeah, I'm not saying they're going to be back. I'm saying it's going to be tougher. I'm looking at this from a 2028 first round pick perspective, from the Eagles' perspective. If the road is harder, that would make the Patriots' record worse, which would make obviously the Eagles' first round pick better.
Fair. Fair. Like I said, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. We'll have to
Look, I'm not predicting that they're going to win the division. No way. I'm just saying the road's going to be a little bit tougher than it's going to be in division this year.
Well, the Patriots are going to go 11-6 next year. So this talk will be all irrelevant. We're going to get into that later in the offseason. I'm sure there's going to be some spirited shows when it comes to starting to talk about the New England Patriots schedule because, you know, I'm biased. Manish claims he's not biased. He is. He's trying to get a rise out of me.
I have been exceedingly critical of the Philadelphia Eagles. So I'm not sure where you get the bias part from.
Oh, you're biased against the Patriots because of me. That's what I'm implying.
No, I don't
that's
care
what
about
I'm implying.
Patriots. I couldn't care less about the Patriots. They cheated long ago and they cheated the Eagles out of the Super Bowl, but that was another lifetime.
Still spiteful, still butthurt.
That was another lifetime ago.
It's still there. And every now and then I can get it to come out. Well, to close out the episode, I do want to just touch on some moves made by the New York Giants today. Not really noteworthy, just noteworthy because of the names that were signed and the positions that were signed. It was the Giants signed three wide receivers today. Braxton Berrios, another name that's been around for a while, Juju Smith-Schuster. And then the final name, probably the biggest name, Odell Beckham Jr., in my opinion, only a name. Guy didn't even play in the league last year, and he's up there on the wrong side of 30. But he is being brought back to the New York Giants on a contract to kind of fight for a spot come training camp. You got any thoughts on this?
I think that they're trying to throw as many guys into the pool as possible. It probably does raise a bit of a red flag about how healthy Malik Nabers will actually be when training camp begins, and then most importantly, when the regular season starts. There was a charity softball game over the weekend, and there was video of Malik Nabers at the plate. He hits a ball. He's kind of jogging to first base, very gingerly, not full speed, not even close to full speed. Prompting questions about how healthy is he right now, and what realistically can we expect when the season rolls along. So I think this is more reflective of that. They're throwing some names out, and I agree with you. Odell Beckham Jr. is more name than game at this point in his career. Same goes with Juju Smith-Schuster, Braxton Berrios, dime a dozen, not really a needle mover at all. So that's what we really need to keep an eye on. How serious was Malik Nabers post-surgery rehab? Where does he stand now? Is it going to take a little bit of time for him to ramp up? Is he going to be 100% at all at any point during the 2026 season? I mean, that's really the question. And I think John Harbaugh and company are kind of throwing as many darts as they can at the wall and see if any of these veteran guys can make some kind of contribution. I wouldn't anticipate more than one of those three guys we mentioned would even make the team. Maybe none of those three make the team when the season starts.
It'll be very interesting to see. And Odell Beckham Jr., even when he played in 2024, was largely irrelevant. So it'll be interesting to see if he makes the team. They got a bunch of guys in that room right now to duke out spots in training camp. It's going to be kind of fascinating to see under first year head coach John Harbaugh. So that's it for me. Manish, you got anything left to close us out?
That's it. I cannot wait to see how this A.J. Brown Patriots trade unfolds. We may or may not have a future bet lined up. We're working out the details. We'll probably find out next June 1st if we actually make this bet or not. But that'll do it for now. Make sure to follow us across all social platforms. Subscribe, please, to our YouTube channel as we try to grow that. Your feedback really does go a long way to help us to grow, tinker, get better. And we have a lot of exciting content coming up for the remainder of the offseason. And even later this week, we'll have a pretty fascinating guest talking about another hot-button topic across the NFL over the last several days. So that'll be it for this episode. For Burge, I'm Manish. We'll talk to you next time.